The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zampro, naturopathic physician, professor at the University of Bridgeport, and your host for this week's program. Really glad to be here to bring you the latest in health, wellness, and alternative medicine today. Well, we have a very interesting guest. We have Dr. James Greenblatt, and he's a psychiatrist specializing in the treatment of children and adults with depressive disorders, but he wrote a very interesting book, which I find fascinating, because it kind of is very much interested in looking at the underlying cause, what we call in Latin, tole causum, treat the underlying cause of depression, as well as following many of the philosophical tenets of natural medicine, like stimulating the healing power of nature, treating the whole person, do no harm, again, underlying cause, and also looking for prevention and other types of nice, friendly interventions. So now, just a little bit of information about depression. Nearly 120 million people worldwide suffer from depression, and that prognosis can be very depressing, that statistic. And after the introduction of the SSRI drugs, which I'm sure Dr. Greenblatt will explain what they are, these are considered the gold standard treatment now, many people get better for a while, but then they kind of don't. They come back. Their depressive symptoms come back and reoccur. So Dr. Greenblatt wrote this very interesting book, which again, it's called The Breakthrough Depression Solution, a personalized nine-step method, the nine steps. So we're going to go over those steps for beating the physical causes of depression. Now, he's an assistant clinical professor at Tufts Medical School and has many... We're going to ask him to give us his bio. So, Dr. Greenblatt, are you there?
I'm here, yes. Thank you.
Oh, good to have you. Tell us a little bit about your background and how did you get interested in looking for this alternative solutions to depression?
Well, I actually went to medical school very much interested in nutrition and alternative health. And... went through medical school and residencies and fellowships in psychiatry and somehow came out as a psychopharmacologist prescribing medications to children and adults. So it didn't take me too long to realize the limited value. There's certainly been some incredible success stories with medications across all of medicine, but in psychiatry it's been very short-sighted and patients aren't getting better the way we would have hoped. So very quickly in my career, about 20 years ago, I started getting back into my original interest in medicine, looking at underlying causes, and particularly how nutrition affects the brain.
Interesting. And I understand that there's a particular approach that you use, which we'll get into, which you call the T-H-E zebra approach. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And your approach where you're asking patients to take care of themselves, advocate for themselves, balance their hormones, exclude negative influences and factors in their health. And then you have very interesting information in your book on minerals, which, of course, is my specialty. I teach courses in minerals and nutrition at the University of Bridgeport, so I'm looking forward to discussing that. And, of course, fatty acids, exercise, the B vitamins, which act as the cofactors, the spark plugs in the body. Then you have something which I didn't know anything about, referenced EEG, so I'm fascinated about that. And then, of course, studying the amino acids and things like that and how to properly work up somebody with depression. So we certainly want to touch all those bases of the part two of your book. But let's talk a little bit about depression, et cetera. You know, I look outside, and we're on the East Coast, we're having, like, just plain rain and cold weather, and I feel kind of depressed. But you're not really talking about the depression that comes with, you know, just feeling glum, can't wait for spring to get here. You're talking about serious illness.
Correct. There's a difference between the sadness that we all experience and mood changes and a diagnosis of depression, where someone is severely impaired in their both their mood and how they feel, but also in a lot of physical symptoms, sleep, appetite, and chronic thoughts of suicide and feelings of rather they would not be around. And that level of depression is common, and people some people are able to work with, other people are on disability and not functioning with those symptoms.
Now, like all illness, depression touches all aspects of both the body and mind and spirit. And, you know, in holistic medicine, we're trained to look at these three entities. And you had said in your book that a lot of people come into the doctor's office with physical complaints that, you know, could be attributed to other underlying causes and syndromes, but may actually be part of depression.
Correct. I think that if someone is feeling sad and or they have an unexplained physical symptom, the knee-jerk reaction, both from our primary care doctors and our psychiatrists, is just to prescribe a medication. And the outline of this book is just to help people begin to look at that there might be many physical causes that could be contributing to that depressed mood. And not everyone with depression is going to have a low thyroid or a mineral deficiency, but some might. And it's important to really individualize treatment to assess what might be going on.
So do you think depression can be cured if you really get to the underlying cause of the illness?
You know, I'm really convinced that it can be cured. When we do studies for medications, when we say a medication works, the research is so bizarre in that they're only looking for 50% improvement in symptoms. And we don't really tolerate that kind of improvement in any other area of medicine. And I think the concept of remission and cured is just kind of removed from mental health treatment for depression. And I do think whether we use just nutritional or natural approaches or if we need to use medicines, but with an integrative approach, I'm very confident that depression can be eliminated.
Now, you spent a lot of time looking at the, you know, the various pharmaceuticals that are out there, and it seems like that list has just grown by leaps and bounds in the last decade as far as that. Maybe you can go over a little bit about the brain and potentially how it works, but keep in mind that depression doesn't only affect the brain. It really affects every cell in the body because every cell in the body has these neurotransmitter receptors on them, and neurotransmitters seem to be very part of the whole picture. I mean, I have some patients right now that I've been working with, and even though it seems like we're balancing all the neurotransmitters with various amino acids and other types of approaches, they still have problems with depression. So they probably have other issues, like we'll get into their hormones and minerals and things like that. But tell us a little bit about the neurotransmitters and the SSRIs and all these acronyms that are thrown around in medicine that maybe the lay person out there listening wouldn't know about.
Okay, good. Well, I think the important thing is to understand that every psychiatric medication that we use for depression, and there are many of them, 20, 30 now, they all affect these levels of these neurotransmitters. And neurotransmitters are chemicals in the brain that cause the neurons, the cells in the brain, to react. And there are hundreds of neurotransmitters. We tend to focus on a couple of them, and people have heard of things like serotonin or dopamine and norepinephrine. But as you said earlier, there's more serotonin in the GI tract than there is in the brain. So it's not just a simple equation of affecting the levels in the brain. But I think what's happened is that the pharmaceutical companies and now some of the natural medicine companies have simplified it and tried to say that if we just increase serotonin, everyone's going to feel better. Well, we have medications that do that, and not everybody feels better. Only about 30 to 40% of people, not too different than a placebo, actually get better with the current medications we have. And then there are natural doctors who are just using amino acids and trying to increase neurotransmitters that way. And again, a subset of people will get better, but a larger subset might not. So the synthesis, how we make these neurotransmitters, is complicated, and it's not just dependent on the amino acids. We talk in the book about all these vitamin and mineral cofactors that are just as critical to go from the amino acid in our food to that neurotransmitter in the brain. And if we can kind of take the whole picture and look at all these factors, usually we can find out how to help an individual who's struggling with depression.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about your looking at biochemical individuality, which kind of dovetails into what you're saying. So some people have, like, I guess like me, I have the, you know, part Celtic curse. So, you know, we don't have a lot of Delta 5 and Delta 6 desaturase, which for those listening that have no idea what I'm talking about, you know, we have a hard time that many people of Irish and English descent have a hard time taking those fats and making fatty acids and making them into the prostaglandins and the hormonal-like molecules that we need to survive. Some people don't absorb minerals too well. I've noticed that, you know, you give things and you assume that just because you're taking them that they're getting in the body doing something, but then you retest them for minerals, and I usually use the red blood cell levels of minerals that are actually in the cell. I try to avoid a lot of the serum levels because those fluctuate very rapidly, and still sometimes I can't get the minerals into people. So it seems like some people absorb really well, some people don't, some people need more minerals than others. I guess that's partially what biochemical individuality is all about.
Yes, and that's the core concept throughout, you know, all the books we've written, but certainly this depression book and the genetics and the term epigenetics as to how we affect the genes all result in this very, very broad range of biochemical individuality. As you said, our particular needs for nutrients, our ability to absorb it, utilize it, and how the receptors in the brain work are also genetically determined. So that package is helpful in understanding that, one, there's a strong genetic component to depression. So if there's a family history of depression, it's important that we understand. It might mean we would be more aggressive about looking at certain areas. But it doesn't mean that you're going to be depressed or yet you have to be depressed. It just means there's a biochemical liability, and we can kind of work through that. But it might be different than someone who doesn't have that genetic.
So are there tests that you'll look at to look at patients' individual genetic or biochemical individuality? How do you work with patients?
I don't do any of the genetic testing because I've found that hasn't been that helpful.
Okay.
In terms of clinically. But I do, before we treat anybody, do a very large battery of kind of routine chemical tests that help us assess what's going on, from B12 levels to homocysteine levels to iron and zinc and magnesium. And then, as you were alluding to, sometimes we need to do more significant testing, looking at levels of fatty acids, looking at trace minerals in the red blood cell.
Right.
So the more testing that I can do, the clearer picture I can paint for the individual as to what might be contributing to their depression.
Especially if they're not responding to the amino acids or the medicines. How come people seem to respond to the medicines for a while sometimes, but then they stop responding? I've noticed that.
Yeah, it's very common, and I think it's getting more common. And the old term was, you know, Prozac poop out, and but now it's pretty much with all the medications. And I think that's just chronic depletion of the amino acids that is required to make these neurotransmitters. So when you're giving Prozac for long periods of time, you end up kind of keeping serotonin around in the synapse, the space in the neurons, longer, but your body stops making that. So in a sense, you're creating a serotonin deficiency. Hence, you have pretty significant symptoms when you stop these medications of withdrawal, which can be horrific, but they also tend to stop working. So we would use the medications with amino acids and supplements.
So it's okay, I mean, under supervision, it's kind of, I think the analogy I've used for my patients, it's like your wood-burning stove is you're running out of wood in the winter time, so you have, and the wood would be kind of like the neurotransmitter. So you have two options. You can put on sweaters and burn twigs and whatever you can find, and that's kind of like the medication to sort of eke out as much of the heat as you can, or you can get a new delivery of wood, or you can kind of do a little bit of both. Keep the thermostat down a little bit, conserve what you have, and also get new deliveries of wood, which would be like taking amino acids or getting them from the diet. It's interesting because amino acids are supposed to come from protein, Dr. Greenblatt, but I'm finding that so many people are low in these amino acids. Could it be that they're not absorbing their proteins, or what's your theory on that?
No, that's very, very important, and we see it all the time, and I've included it in a couple of these chapters because right. It's so significant and such an easy intervention. That I have patients, just the way you're describing, that are eating, they're perfectly healthy, you know, brown rice and Alaskan salmon and high-protein diets, and their amino acid levels are extremely low. And most of the time, they just don't have sufficient hydrochloric acid or digestive enzymes to break these proteins down so the amino acids are absorbed. So sometimes a simple intervention, just helping them digest their food better, has been sufficient to help with depression.
Yeah, I remember seeing a person that I was with my interns at the University of Bridgeport, where I'm a professor there teaching in the College of Naturopathic Medicine, and I was looking at the amino acids, and they were saying, "Dr. Z, is this lady a vegan? Is she getting enough protein?" And I looked at them and said, "No, she's pretty much like a carnivorous person. Almost following like the South Beach or Atkins diet. She's eating lots of protein," and they were scratching their heads. How could they be eating so much protein and yet have no amino acids? And then you have the opposite, where you have a person who's a vegan that's not doing it correctly, and they're not getting the amino acids, and then all different combinations and permutations in between. So enzymes are very critical, you feel.
Yes, it's been a very, very important intervention, and the dietary history is not always important. I found particularly when someone's struggling with depression, there's usually been significant stress in their lives, sometimes a number of years before they're seeking treatment, but there are times I've found that acute stress response just shuts off the digestive system in such a way that it's very hard to regroup. And without supporting with digestive enzymes, and usually hydrochloric acid, a lot of people get stuck and kind of miss the hydrochloric acid and just use enzymes without acid, and that's very hard to
I did one of my senior dissertations in gastroenterology at Bastyr University on the role of zinc in the biochemical manufacture of hydrochloric acid. So I have a lot of background in studies in that, and I know zinc is one of your most important minerals. But let's talk about that zebra approach. Zebra approach. I elucidated it before, but let's go through each part of it, which is part two in your book.
Okay, well, yeah, I was trying to think of a mnemonic that could help people remember all the different factors. And when I got close to zebra, I had to use it because I think zebras are kind of critical in my thinking over the years because of their unique stripe pattern. So there's no two zebras with the same stripe pattern. So it really kind of solidifies this concept of biochemical individuality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the background of the zebra. But what we've done is just take the mnemonic, T-H-E, zebra with two E's, and kind of list all the things that I think are important to look at that might be contributing. And again, for any one person, it won't be all of these. It could be one or two. The first one, T, is take care of yourself, which just looks at really the basics, which is sleep, stress, and diet. We know, and I see every week, I see someone with really significant sleep disorders or sleep apnea that's never been addressed, that's been treated with many, many medications, and until the sleep apnea is addressed, their mood is not going to get better. So sleep is critical. Stress is, a whole hour in itself, but clearly a major factor in depression. And the other variable is diet, and I try to focus on the basics, which is eliminating refined sugar and how that can cause
nutrient depletion. You mentioned stress a bit. So people can have anxiety and depression. One of my patients said, I don't understand how I could have anxiety and depression at the same time. They seem like two opposite ends of the spectrum. How can they coexist in the same person? Can you explain that and maybe tie it into what's going on in the body?
Sure. Well, I think that it's actually more common now that we see anxiety with depression. And, depression is a mood state and anxiety. People feel the physical manifestations of fear. And anxiety in particular is quite well grounded, in my experience, in nutritional deficiencies like magnesium and the essential fatty acids, and just this overproduction of our stress hormones. So I'd say the majority of patients that we're seeing really struggle with both depression and anxiety, and the underlying nutritional deficiencies can be similar, if not identical.
Yeah, magnesium is very critical. Magnesium does so many things in the body, and so do the oils. That's really incredible. And then you mentioned sugar. Now, sugar, I guess, it's certainly masquerades in many different forms and types, but how does sugar, we always hear, oh, sugar's bad for you, and I always tell my patients that and try to, say, so well, some sugar's okay, but it's a lot of sugar that stresses out the body. How is sugar creating or making depression worse?
Well, again, it's individualized. There are those people that can eat their sugar without a problem. But for others, it sets up a blood sugar imbalance, whether it's low blood sugar, and those periods of low blood sugar get sustained and create anxiety and depression. And then for the general individual, prolonged refined sugar use depletes nutrients, particularly B vitamins. And those are critical for brain function and cofactors for all these enzymes that you referred to earlier. So, again, and then there's individuals that have these very unique reactions to sugar where they can get profoundly depressed following sugar use, and sometimes it's unrelated to blood sugar. But
I would assume coffee, too, because, coffee kind of jacks up the release of adrenaline and norepinephrine, but then sort of once it runs out, it feels like you're dropping off a cliff for many people.
Yes. Absolutely.
So tea is much better. I say tea is, tea is great because green tea has that epigenetic. And plus they've discovered a new kind of amino acid, theanine, which really, when I studied amino acids and got certified in that, I never learned about theanine, but it seems like it's a fairly newcomer in the amino acid world, and it has a very calming effect on the body.
Yes, and the caffeine has tea has a slight stimulating of the caffeine with the kind of relaxation of the theanine, so the combination seems to be much, much better for individuals.
Well, I'm looking at the time. We need to take a break. Usually at about the 30-minute out at the end, we take a little break, and then we'll reintroduce you and tell people how to get your book again.
Great.
If you're just joining us, we're discussing a very interesting book written by Dr. James Greenblatt, psychiatrist specializing in the treatment of children and adults with depressive disorders, and we're talking about his book, A Breakthrough Depression Solution, Personalized Nine-Step Method for Beating the Physical Causes of Your Depression. So we'll be back. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more right here on Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Radio Network celebrating 5 years of independent news. Did you miss your favorite show on Progressive Radio Network? Well, no need to worry. We have all of our shows archived on our website. Go to progressiveradionetwork.com/archives and find the show you're looking for.
Hello, I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and you can hear my program, If You Love This Planet, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, every Sunday at 3 p.m. Please join me as I interview a huge variety of special guests from around the world about a range of topics, including the health of the planet and prescriptions for survival. So, if you do love this planet, tune in to the Progressive Radio Network every Sunday at 3 p.m.
Is a state of emergency. No, it's not. It's more of a state of urgency. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your news dissector. I'm on the radio Fridays at 1 p.m. right here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, offering a different narrative to the news, challenging what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're reading, offering another way of understanding what's going on. Join me online on MediaChannel.org and join me here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com Fridays at 1 p.m. Be there or be square.
Mike Fader here. Every Thursday following Gary Noll from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, I will expound and expand on stories, both personal and public, attempting to make the sometimes ephemeral but always essential connections between our internal landscapes and our external lives. So please join me, Mike Fader, Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time for The Turning Point, here on the Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
And we're back with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. And we have a special guest, Dr. James Greenblatt. He's discussing depression and what you can do about it to stay healthy in this time, how to nourish your brain with the zebra approach, which we're talking about now. And his book's called The Breakthrough Depression Solution, A Personalized Nine-Step Method for Beating the Physical Causes of Your Depression. Dr. Greenblatt, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's get into hormones. That's the H part of the zebra solution. Now, I think this is very profound because I was reading your book and checking some of the references there and noticed that there's a lot of references discussing not only how menopause, which has been well established in medicine that this state exists when a woman's hormones go, basically the ovaries shut down and then give all the work over to the adrenal glands. But what about men and this thing called andropause? And you actually have referenced some double-blind, placebo-controlled trials that hormones have helped men with depression become happier and healthier. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think one thing that you brought up I just want to stress is that a lot of the information in this book we've been talking about for 10 or 15 years But it's only really within the past 5 years that the scientific research has really supported these findings, and testosterone is one of them, where if we just gave testosterone to every depressed male, they're not going to feel better. And that's right. How, you know, research is done. But if we look at the individual and we draw testosterone levels on males, and we might think about it in a 60-year-old male, but we don't think about it in a 30-year-old male, and we've seen very low levels. And low levels of testosterone is associated with depressed mood, fatigue, anxiety, low libido, and the other symptoms that you and I would refer to as depression. So we can try to understand why there's low testosterone and or just supplement with testosterone and make a huge difference in some patients I have had been to, again, many psychiatrists have tried many antidepressants and aren't going to feel better without addressing the underlying cause.
Yeah, I agree. I've helped many men with andropause and looking at why what's happening to the testosterone. What's very interesting for those listening is that if you're going to try to discuss this with your doctor, make sure the doctor doesn't only run a total testosterone, but make sure that they run the free and the bound testosterone, as well as the sex hormone binding globulin, because these are very critical parts to a proper testosterone panel, and you want to also run your estradiol and prolactin and probably a host of other hormones. I know you discussed some of these in your book, Dr. Greenblatt.
Yeah, some of the simplest ones that are covered by insurance and, you know, most doctors are aware of are just looking at levels of DHEA. And this is a simple blood test that I don't think many doctors would have a problem with. And that is the precursor to all the steroid hormones, particularly testosterone and
now, some men, you give them DHEA and it helps them, but then all of a sudden they start to develop, you know, gynecomastia, breasts and things like that. And in those men, I think that their testosterone is being changed or aromatized into the estrogen. And I think that there's things that you can do nutritionally to stop that.
Right.
And that one of those is zinc, which segues me into the next part of your... we're finished with the... Now we're starting the zebra part of the acronym. Zinc is very critical for many things.
No, zinc is actually... The first book that I wrote was on anorexia nervosa, where essentially the core part of the book was zinc deficiency as a trigger for eating disorders in adolescents. So zinc is very much an important part of the work that we've done over the years. But there's clear research looking at zinc and depression. One, everybody's talking about serotonin, and the serotonin receptor in the brain is held together by the molecule zinc. So it's critical for a normal functioning of the serotonin receptor. And we have good academic studies looking at zinc deficiency in depression, as well as adding zinc to antidepressants. People are already taking antidepressants with an augmentation response for those who aren't getting better without it.
That's very interesting. I know zinc is diametrically opposed to copper, so oftentimes I'll look at their zinc to copper ratio and find out that I have to remove copper from their body. I find this in a lot of vegetarians, that because it seems like the vegetarian diet seems to predispose people to excessive levels of copper. Anyway, this is my own interesting findings, which I've written about and discussed in several writings. But there's other minerals that are involved in that you discuss in your book. What about lithium? You know, lithium's been kind of targeted as this thing for bipolar, but yet if you read some of the very interesting studies out of Texas, it actually seems to help people with all kinds of behavioral disorders.
Lithium, I think, is an incredible natural trace mineral that many people don't understand that. Mm. They just see it as a pharmaceutical drug, which at normal doses that we use in psychiatry tend to cause significant side effects, kidney damage, thyroid damage. But at natural trace mineral amounts, something that you would get in the water, in food, or we use doses of lithium at 4 or 5 milligrams, very tiny natural doses you can get in a health food store,
right,
to treat depression and treat mood irregularity, and it's been incredibly helpful.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen good reference on that. And what about, I know chromium is very critical. Chromium, vanadium are very critical minerals for balancing a person's blood sugar. They're intimately involved in handling sugar and insulin, and I know we're living in this whole syndrome X diagnosis where people seem to have problems with heavy-duty carbohydrates and sugar, and perhaps chromium and vanadium could be very helpful for these individuals.
Yeah, and there's actually decent research looking at chromium and depression, and particularly in actually one of the more common forms of depression called atypical depression. So atypical depression is described as someone who is sleeping more, irritable, and craving carbohydrates. And that depression has been shown to be responsive to chromium supplementation.
Now, how long does it take for the minerals to, I guess it's an individualized question again, but, to sort of, for someone to be patient on these things, because sometimes when they're depressed and they're coming to see me or yourself, maybe they've been to many psychiatrists and they're kind of, I feel bad that I have to, pay for the other doctor's, unfortunate inability to get the patient well. And of course they mean well and are trying their best, but nonetheless, the people are often at the end of their rope and they may not, I find that some of these minerals and things like that are very important, but they do take some time. What do you see in your practice, Doctor?
Yeah, I think repleting trace minerals can take months, and
yeah,
people don't feel better right away. I have found things like the amino acids can work more quickly, other nutrients, if trying to improve mood, like carnitine or ribose, we kind of help people in terms of improving mood and energy. And then there are times I do need to use medications initially, but over the course of 3 or 6 months, being able to stop the medications if patients are willing to utilize the nutritional alternatives we're speaking of.
So sometimes if people are pretty, come in very depleted, sometimes the medication can give them a little bit of a therapeutic rainbow, so to speak, and then you can work on dealing with that underlying cause and then kind of shifting it, kind of titrating the approaches.
Yeah, and typically I wouldn't use the medications without the amino acid precursors.
Yeah, or else
so looking
you could
at
develop
the amino acids with the medicine,
right,
tend to get a more robust response and much easier to come off the medications.
I like that approach. I think that makes quite a bit of sense there. Let's talk a little about exercise and energy. That was chapter 12 in your book, which is the second of the E's in Zebra. Exercise, now when you're depressed, the last thing you want to do really oftentimes is exercise. You just want to sit and be still and listless.
Right, exactly. That's why all the research that has shown exercise being helpful, it's a little hard to get a patient to really appreciate that because they feel miserable and they're not motivated.
Right.
And that's the chapter we talk about, doing some short-term interventions to improve energy and motivation, and that is looking at B12 levels, looking at adding things like ribose, carnitine, and CoQ10. And typically with that combination, we can improve energy enough to get them to at least start taking their walks, getting some exercise, which then creates them their mood improved enough that they can continue to...
Yeah, I've run an interesting test, the organic acid test, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with, but looks at a lot of the deficiencies in carnitine and CoQ10 and what's going on at the cellular level, at the Krebs cycle level.
And
I found that helpful
in
a lot
test.
Of people.
Yeah, no, we do that on everyone that walks in the office.
Oh, nice.
We talk about that, I think, in the lab testing, but it's been a critical test at looking at the body's ability to kind of produce energy at the cellular level.
Yeah, it's very critical because, you know, again, people are going to try the amino acids. They're going to try some of the drugs and even some of the minerals. But some people need that boost or have other cofactors, other viruses they're working with. Maybe they have I know the organic acids often pick up candida and dysbiosis, abnormal bacteria living in your body, and there's a particular strain of Clostridia that the organic acids picks up that can actually lead to depression in people and also psychiatric disorders.
Yes.
And you familiar with that, doctor?
Yes. No, we've seen it a number of times, and it's just profound changes if we can aggressively treat that.
Yeah, it's just amazing that the bowels are connected to the brain and the whole body is wired together. Now, let's talk about, in the last 15 minutes or so, let's talk about this referenced EEG, because that was something whenever I read someone's book, you know, I might be familiar with quite a number of the approaches there, but boy, that was something that I didn't really have any idea of and learned quite a bit. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, as a psychiatrist, I'm still in a position to prescribing medications because we end up seeing, you know, the most significantly ill, depressed patients who've tried many, many other drugs. And when they come to see me, years ago, I would be just taking an educated guess like everybody else. What's the next medicine? And I was tired of putting the patients through this approach of just guessing because we really have no way of predicting which of these 20 medicines might be helpful.
Mm.
Or which combination of medicines, which means there are thousands of combinations. So reference EEG was a tool that I've been using now for about 7 years, which is just a database that was developed by two psychiatrists over 20 years where they were able to look at the EEG, the brainwave patterns, and what the medication responses were. If you gave a medicine like Prozac, what did it do to the EEG? What did it do to the brainwave? And so what we're able to do is, and for unmedicated patients who haven't taken medicine or off the medication, all they do is get a routine EEG, and then we get a report called a reference EEG that helps predict this particular patient would respond to an antidepressant, this particular patient would respond to a mood stabilizer, this particular patient might respond to a combination of these two medicines. So it's not, you know, a cookbook, and it's not the answer for everyone, but it's been such an incredible tool to help guide me so I'm not just guessing and putting patients on medications without knowing why.
And I guess it's because of EEG, it's less expensive than if you were to kind of, we couldn't do MRIs on everyone and watch their brain light up based on their, you know, whatever medications they're doing. So this is another an easier way to do this.
Right. Well, it's certainly cost-effective, and database that was collected over many, many years can really kind of pinpoint which medications, again, based on, again, biochemical individuality, there's a kind of unique EEG signature.
Right.
And we can look at that, and we can predict the medications that would kind of help normalize that pattern.
Now, besides the amino acids we discussed, there's certain ones we discussed the neurotransmitters. We didn't really discuss tryptophan and 5-HTP and some of these other things, but you commented on some of them as being, you know, part of the solution, but not always, not everyone responds to the amino acids and the proteins and, of course, helping the digestion, but it's a big part of it. Can you review some of the amino acids that one would consider?
Sure. I mean, I think there are two approaches I take. Is one is kind of optimizing amino acids, and we use a lot of what we call the free form, you know, amino acids, low dosages of all the essential amino acids. But in particularly with a genetic history of depression or someone significantly depressed, then we would use higher doses of 5-HTP, which is a precursor to serotonin, and tyrosine. And in my experience, I found that the combination is better than one alone.
Is that right?
So we're using 5-HTP and tyrosine together with some of the vitamin and mineral cofactors, so the B6, folate, zinc, and using those and titrating the dose till we get improvement in mood and oftentimes improvement in other psychiatric symptoms like anxiety.
I know that could take some time, but that sounds like a good approach. I guess they come in powder, these amino acids. You usually have patients take the amino acids on an empty stomach away from food?
Yes.
So that they
typically
get really into
we
the
try
brain,
to get
or?
It to a half hour, hour before meals.
Okay.
Or a couple hours after meals. Yes.
Right. So that's the zebra.
That is the zebra, yes.
And, so just to quickly review, take care of yourself. We talked about that. Hormones, the H, E, exclude various things. Zinc for the Z, zinc and many other minerals. E for the fatty acids. We touched on that earlier on. Exercise and energetics of the Krebs cycle and the energy cycle. B vitamins, the B, other vitamins. R for the reference, e.g. A amino acids. So now someone comes in your office and they're sitting in front of you and you want to begin the process of helping them. So you would run various labs. By the way, where is your office there, Dr. Greenblatt?
The office is right outside of Boston in Waltham, Massachusetts.
Okay, great. I'll give you, what's your website? Might as well touch on that now.
The simplest website is James Greenblatt, MD.
Okay. So people can get information if they want to come see you or whatnot. Great.
Sure.
How about when we get into, you mentioned in the beginning of your book, The Lost Art of Psychotherapy and understanding, giving patients tools, and whether you're coming at it from a Freudian or Ericksonian or a NLP or emotional freedom technique perspective. There's so many tools and ways to reach people to go beyond the biochemistry. You have a whole chapter on that. Talk about what you find is to help people with depression.
Well, I mean, the core of the book is that biological foundation, because it's so hard to do therapy. It's so hard to see patients really motivated to look and explore mind-body techniques, and they want to take care of themselves, but they can't. They can't because they're profoundly deficient in B12 or some other nutrients. So the core of the book is this biological approach that I call nourishing the brain. But then,
right,
as you describe, nurturing the mind. And we talk about beyond biochemistry and helping people kind of utilize therapy or various mind-body techniques. And in my experience, I haven't found that there's one perfect fit. Again, it's individual. There's some people that can meditate and find yoga incredibly helpful. Other people can't, but they can utilize some traditional psychotherapy where they establish a relationship with somebody and can discuss their past and work towards their future. Mm. And we go on to talk about various just techniques of what I call letting go, everything from laughter therapy to the role that religion and spirituality plays in depression. We have found, or research has shown, that people that do believe in something and have religious beliefs are much less likely to be depressed and recover more quickly.
And you mentioned way earlier on that oftentimes there's some trauma that is sort of the predecessor. Now, we don't know whether that's the sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, or these are the big stresses on the home, what's called the home scale. Your mom passed, or you got divorced, or you're even good stresses like you're trying to sell your house and things like that.
Right.
How do you help people with their self-talk? Because I find that when I really get to the nitty-gritty of looking at people, they have, with depression, they have negative self-talk. They have habitual, it's a habit at some level. It's a habitual way of talking to themselves in a self-explanatory methodology, talking to themselves negatively. So these habits have to be broken. So do you ever touch on that with your patients?
Well, it's critical, and I think that for some, it's simply a habit, and for others, it's really an obsession. So I see a lot of people who really have obsessional disorders around negativity and low self-esteem that needs to get treated almost as we would obsessive-compulsive disorder. But that's why we've shown that for many patients, what we call cognitive behavioral therapy, helping people understand these negative patterns, are destructive. They are interfering with their health. And if they can be aware of those thought processes and actually change it, the research has shown we can change how their brains look.
Wow.
So cognitive behavioral therapy can be incredibly helpful.
All incredible. So in the last 2 minutes, why don't you give a summary of the book and why people should go get it, and how it differs from other of the books on depression, and finish up with some closing thoughts.
Great. Now, I appreciate the time to talk about this, because I think what's unique about this book is that I'm not taking sides. I'm not saying that medication is bad, nutrition is good, or that the nutrition is a waste of money and everyone needs to take medications. We're looking at this very, very disabling disorder, depression, which in a few years will be the second leading cause of disability in the world.
Wow.
And saying that everybody's different, can we all look at underlying causes? And if we find them, we can treat them. Because if we look and understand the cause, then we can theoretically come up with a cure and find remission. Too many people suffer and live with these depressed moods because they've tried a medicine or two or three, and it hasn't helped, and they give up hope. So I think my most important message is that there is hope. I believe an individual who looks for these nine kind of physical causes usually can find something. And if we need to use medicine, we look at targeting it with a very individualized approach, like something like reference EEG.
Are you finding that your colleagues are embracing this sort of approach finally, or are you still getting a lot of resistance from pharmaceutical and other colleagues that are more still in the old school, so to speak?
Yeah, my colleagues, I think, have been the slowest to come around. I think, you know, other physicians and consumers are clearly looking for alternatives. I think I have colleagues that criticize the reference EEG without even knowing what it is. But they need to say it doesn't work, even though there's now good research to support it. And I think what my colleagues have done with the nutritional approach is they've seen enough research on the omega-3 fatty acids, so they're putting everybody on fish oil.
Right.
And they're thinking that that's the treatment for depression.
Right.
And for many it might help, but it doesn't explore all the possibilities.
All those things that you talked about in the book, the zebra approach, I love that. It's easy to remember, and I hope that folks listening got a lot out of the program, and we really appreciate. Maybe we'll have you back on to talk about your book on anorexia, Dr. Greenblatt. So talk to your publicist, and we'll get in touch with you.
That'd be great.
Okay, thanks for your time, and really appreciate it.
Okay, take care. Thank you.
Okay, that's Dr. James M. Greenblatt, author of The Breakthrough Depression Solution, a personalized 9-step method for beating the physical causes of your depression. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, wishing you the best and asking you to stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye.